Right, I also bring greetings to you this morning. And we are going to do something a little bit different than what you may have been expecting for the next hour. I would like to have two brothers share what they've been doing in the recent weeks, and for one of them, the recent months. Reynold and Lorna just came back, and after spending several months in Belize and doing an exploration trip there to see what doors God would open or close. And Reynold, your emails have been few and far between. Thank you for the ones you did send. We appreciated them and read them and tried to picture where you are, what you're doing from those, so they were helpful. But I'm sure there was a lot left out. And if any of you are like me, you know, as you come back, we're wondering where you are, where your heart is, where you're going, and would like to hear from you a little bit more on maybe a bit of a report on what you felt God did there while you were there, and now as you're coming back, where your focus is, where your heart is, and what you're praying about, so we can be informed and can pray with you. And then also Dwight was down there for more like a week or two, met with some brothers, connected with some brothers that he had been involved with very closely in the work at the deaf school, and they felt led to gather again and try to go over and rehearse all that had happened. And so we would like to hear from him as well and invite him to come first and give a report on that. And then also, and unfortunately, Dineke is not here this morning when I finally got to this, and it's the very Sunday that they're gone. But I did feel like it's long overdue, and I wanted to give a bit of a report on what's happening in her life as well. And maybe most of you are informed, but I don't want to take that, I don't want to assume that. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of an outline of what's been happening in her life and where she's focused on. She has applied to or sent in an application form for a midwifery school based in the Philippines, and her application has been received and accepted. And so she is planning, Lord willing, this coming fall to be going to the Philippines for, I believe, about 2 years. And I just wanted to give you a little more information about that. I was thinking maybe she could have even shared this morning if she'd be here, but that's not possible, I guess. So, so I just wrote a few. It's going to be a little scattered here, but bear with me. I'm just going to try to read a few things here. One of the things that she is needing is a letter of commissioning by the church here. That is very important for the school and also for the government in allowing her to come into the country, is that, first of all, the school requires her to be, that a local church would send her, and we have already been asked to fill out a form with a lot of detailed information about her, and we did that a few months ago prior to her being accepted. So it must not sound too bad because they accepted her after they got that. But now they're asking for a letter of commissioning by the church here, stating that you have been commissioned by your church to serve as a missionary in the Philippines. This letter is mandatory, because the Philippine government will not approve a missionary visa without validation that you are serving as a missionary. It is the unarguable position of the Philippine government that a recognized church body is the primary agent that qualifies a missionary, since the church is a formal religious entity. And so the school is asking for that, and also the government in the Philippines in allowing her to come into the country. And so that is something that you as a church need to be willing to do if she's going to get that letter. So if you're not, then certainly let her know or let us know. But That is the direction that we're going. What we're planning on doing is to write up a letter like that, expressing in some formal way that we as a church are sending her and commissioning her as a missionary and to serve. Now, a little bit of information about the school itself. A Christian-based mission school for direct entry midwife students. It's an opportunity to earn a degree in midwifery while serving on the mission field. New Life International School of Midwifery is a Christian school for direct entry midwife students. Although our school is based on a U.S. curriculum and standards outlined by the National College of Midwifery, the entire training is actually done in the Philippines. Most of our students are from the United States and Canada. However, other countries represented include South Africa, England, Denmark, Jamaica, Ireland, China, and Switzerland. The entire training is actually done in the Philippines. We are a Christian mission organization comprised of approximately 70 individuals who come from a variety of denominational and non-denominational backgrounds. The overall team is comprised of missionaries, including married couples with families, as well as single individuals, and a wonderful group of Filipino Christian workers. New Life International School of Midwifery is operated as an extension of our birthing center, which is the largest charity-based birthing clinic in the Philippines, serving almost 20,000 patients annually. Families living in severe poverty conditions that cannot afford quality health care comprise our primary target group. All services provided at the clinic are free of charge. We simply desire to show women God's mercy and kindness in a practical way as Jesus taught. The hands-on and deeply relational skill of midwifery is proven to be a powerful avenue in bringing God's love and kindness to suffering people. Last year, our staff and students delivered approximately 1,500 babies. More than 19,000 babies have been delivered at our clinic during the past 16 years. New Life International School of Midwifery is unique in that the student tuition fees, and that is, by the way, very expensive. And if God would lay it on your heart to help with that, certainly do that. I still don't know where she's going to get the funds for it, frankly. But it is very expensive, and she is expected to come up with the funds for those 2 years. But what they're saying here is that the tuition of students enrolled in our school what is used to fund the clinic that she'll be working in. New Life International School of Midwifery can be deeply fulfilling. Each student actually functions as a missionary while they are studying at our school located on the mission field. Basically, students can earn a degree while serving the poor in addition to learning how to be a missionary. So that's just a bit of information that for some of you may have been new. But it's a little bit what is happening in her life. And if you have any input or feedback to that, certainly feel free to share, get in touch with us or with her if you have questions. All right, well, Dwight, if you're ready, I'm going to turn the time over to you, and then when you're finished, Reynold, you can just go right behind him.
In Hebrews chapter 3, verse 12, it said, "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." Sin could come and creep in so easily and deceive us. And so that's why we're gathered here this morning too, so we could exhort one another, and it says here daily. It even tells us how often it should be done. And we should take heed, beware.
Let us therefore, after he explained what happened to the Israelites and the Hebrew children and how the, you know, unbelief kept them out from the promise that God had for them, some of them, and it said, let us therefore fear, chapter 4, Hebrews 4:1, let us fear lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. I know, in short, I think this was some of what took place on the trip down to Belize, Central America, you know, exhorting one another and encouraging one another and praying with one another and, you know, doing some of that one another in thing that we've been talking about. And my family and I left. We went over to PA, Pennsylvania. I have a sister living there and my mom. She just moved up too for medical reasons. And so my wife and children stayed there with them. They had a great time. The 2 weeks we were down there, or they spent 2 weeks down there. I didn't. I ran on down to Belize for about 10 days, which consists of doing some personal business, spending some time with my family there and dealing with some issues that we're facing as a family, and my mom wanted me to look into it. So spent some time meeting with various other family member and opening our hearts on some of those issues and sharing, and some of the stuff wasn't easy to talk about but was necessary. So that was also part of my trip, what took place. But the purpose in why I was even invited to come down to Belize was the connection I had with some of these brothers, Brother Reynold and some other brothers that we had worked together at the deaf boarding school, a boarding school for the hearing impaired, several years ago. And we had done that work together for several years, and various ones of us that had been leaders, directors of the institute, we were looking for the opportunity someday when we could all get together again and share hearts and find out where we're at in life and where we're going. And I thought perhaps maybe we would have talked a lot more about the past, but I think we all came with a heart to encourage each other for the future and go on. And so that's what we did. We spent more time. We took off, packed up our stuff, camping stuff, and we went up into the mountains in a cottage there. Spent time sharing our hearts and what is God doing in our lives, and, you know, what are things that we could pray for each other? How could we encourage each other along the way, and spending time praying? And I could say that the highlight of my trip had been the time praying together. The time we brothers spent praying together had been just, it had been like a new birth experience again. I use that term sometimes. Maybe I shouldn't use that. In that sense, it was a very can I say charismatic moment? Is that okay? Would you accept that? For me personally, and the time down there had been so refreshing for me. Also, I see the need in my life. You know, and I was really looking at that scripture the time I was down there. Even before I went, I felt the Lord was speaking to my heart, on the issue of from the Word of God, where with Mary and Martha. And Martha came to Jesus and said, Lord, I mean, can't you see I'm all busy, you know, here to serve you, here to serve your people, you know, here to serve your disciples. And I need help, Lord. I mean, the work is overloaded. I mean, can't you send more helpers here, over here? I mean, Mary's just sitting over there, Lord. Can't you admonish her? And the Lord said, one thing is needful. And that line really hit me. He said, one thing is needful. And Mary did it. I was like, wow, okay. What did Mary do then? You know, study the life. Look at Mary. What did she do? What was she doing in that moment? Sitting at Jesus' feet. She was coming apart, you know, coming aside. Listening to the Lord. Not just be all cumbered with serving. And it was so refreshing for me. Day after day, the communion, you know, and the time of being alone with God. And even though I missed my wife, I think more than I ever did before on any other trip, I could hardly bear it, the thought of being away for that amount of time. And I think part of that too, the depth in which I really was longing to be back with my family again, was also, you know, out of how much the Lord has been allowing in our path, and things like that draws you together. And so there's much blessing in trials, you know, much blessings in trials. And so we did spend time praying and sharing our hearts there, and we see the need. I think some of us more than some others see the need of perhaps meeting again and bearing some of the things on our heart to those that we had worked with in the past. To I guess Brother Reynold and myself had felt like we had done that. But this one brother felt like that was leading out. He really sees the need for it as him being the leader. And so I don't know what that will be. Someday he might call and say, well, you know, can we all make it down there again to Belize? I did tell him I would like to be a support if I know if this could make him more free and make others more free. And I also got to spend some time with Brother Reynold a bit, and went out to one of this village that tentatively he's thinking of probably living there someday, and I guess he could share more on that. Well, visit with some of those brothers. I connected with the little Bible study group down there and had the opportunity to preach the word also. And spend time with them individually and encourage them along in the Lord as they did the same for my life too. Another highlight of the trip was coming back, reuniting with my wife and family. And you know, my wife thought that she'd pop in a little surprise there for me, pick me up at the airport all alone, you know. Some ways I was like, whoa, I can't, you know, I have to wait another night to see the children too. But it was so good to just come aside, you know, with my wife and have a time alone. That's a blessing. And I say that as an encouragement too to the married couples here. You know, I remember the early stage marriage where, you know, brothers would talk about taking a time off and being alone with the wife and without the children. And I used to think, well, why would I want to be without the children? I mean, they're part of the family. And yes, even though I don't want to be without them, I see the need to sometimes be without them, if I could say it that way. So my wife really surprised me there, and all the stuff she put off and did. I mean, it was such a blessing for me. I felt like I was like on honeymoon again, you know, walking around with my wife. And I was like, what? And we just got married, you know. Just that whole And I see this as an encouragement to you all also as married couples, you know, learn to take time for each other and listen to each other's heart and spending time alone and enjoy the beauty of marriage which God created for us to enjoy. He designed it. He's the designer, the architect, right? He drew the whole picture, and that's beautiful. So that was a big highlight in the trip too. And I want to say thank you for those of you that had prayed for us during this time, and we desire your prayers as life on planet Earth isn't over yet, and so we still have some curveballs to pull off, and by God's grace we want to, as we live this new life that we were talking about this morning, you know, as we allow this new life, as we allow this life to manifest through us, that we could still trust God. Don't allow this evil heart, it says in Hebrews 3, it said an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. So, Lord bless you and thanks again.
Now, I like to share something that'd be worth sharing, but now, what is that? There's a full church full of heads all looking to me, so that's good. Well, let me see if I find something that's worth sharing. I was thinking I would just read a scripture here from Luke 20, verse 22 to 25. The last part of 23, I said 22, 20, the 23rd verse, the last part where Jesus starts talking, he says, "Why tempt ye me? Show me a penny. Whose image and superscription hath it?" They answered and said, "Caesar's." And he said unto them, "Render therefore unto Caesar the things which be Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's." And then I made a little note there. Do I understand this reading? It has two sides. The side what is for Caesar, and then the other side is what is for God. And that's where we're so often finding ourselves and cutting the lines between there. What is for Caesar and what is for God? Or what is for the world and what is for God? Or what is the righteous way and what is the other way? I'll put that verse in there, and then I'll go over and just simply give a physical report what happened, I guess. That's where we'll be going, and then and I'll add a few parts that the Lord been sharing me while we were going through the time. I think I should move this board up here, but could somebody give me a hand to bring this up? Good. I always like to have a little understanding where we are. And who all knows where Bliss is? I think we all know by now. That's good enough, all right? So I'm not going to draw a big map to bring down where's Bliss, but I'll just draw about 30-minute circle or something like that to just point out a little bit where we were going here and there, just so that you could follow. I'll draw the map since this is going to the west, this will be west here. This is a upside down map then, but this is east. And then that is south that way. North, that's upside down, but just for me my mindset works that way better, so I'll put it that way. Not even sure how to write Guatemala, but anyway. Just to give you a little idea, this is the capital city of Belize, right here, Belmopan. And this is Spanish Lookout, the Mennonite place here. Spanish Lookout. They have a property there that they own by themselves and they share among themselves. So that's where I was born and grew up there. This is the border, and then we cross into Guatemala. And comes the river coming along here, and it's the border of Spanish Lookout, and then goes out. So we have an entrance coming across the river and coming into Spanish Lookout, and then we have one going along here, and then it goes out. So there's a couple ways here, and then another one going out to the back, close to Guatemala, and then coming across. And this is the place where we had our first meeting when we were in Belize, close to Guatemala. Okay. End of October, we left here and we flew to Belize. We arrived good, everything went well. We were then moving into our house, which is close to the Mennonites, but on the other side of the river. At the deaf school, we still have our house there, and we had the permission to live in that house, so we did move there. We lived in the in our house in Belize, and we really enjoyed that, living in our own house. And from there, I then went over back to Spanish Lookout, which is about 5 miles to my dad's place. I went back there to work on getting the tent ready, which I think most of you know about, that I was having a tent shipped over to Belize, so we worked on getting it ready with making the outside posts. I got myself some fence posts, and I like the galvanized fence posts, not the it's a tin gauge, so they were light posts. I welded in the tops and bottoms so that we could put up our tent, and was really working with it, and it came in good. And one morning, as I was sharing the vehicle with my wife, I left it at home, so I just went hitchhiking, which is not a bad idea because hitchhikers are around. I don't think half of the people have a vehicle, so it's a common thing for hitchhikers to be around. So I hitchhiked just a couple miles over to my dad's place. And as I was walking out of the lane, there was somebody coming, driving back from behind me, and he stopped and asked if I'd like to have a ride. Well, sure, we could have a ride. I jumped in and we started driving off, and we started talking about it. It was an American couple here, and just simply said they looked like charity people, if I should say, okay, and just to have a little clue who they were. I didn't know where they came from, what they were, and they were saying their name were like Grady McDonald's. Okay, well, who are they? But now they said, yeah, the Lord had told them to sell everything and move to Belize as missionaries, and they just got there about 2 months that had been there, and and they were just seeking after the Lord, how they'll find their way. They weren't quite sure how to do it, and they were kind of new there. And then they were very interested in listening to what I had to share, and oh, it just thrilled their heart, because they had wanted to see something like my vision as well, because it was very much alike what they were thinking, what I was thinking, and we were sharing our hearts, and all of a sudden we had a couple there with us that we were able to sit down and share our hearts to the deepest level of we understood. I don't know, maybe they were able to go a deeper level yet, but we were able to share whatever we were having in our heart with easy understanding, and no complications as now maybe they are guessing what we're trying to say or whatever. And that was a huge blessing. That was the first week that we were there, and from that time on we have been becoming good friends, and we still are very good friends up to today. And it's a family of 6 children. The oldest is 20, and the youngest is 2, or and it's there somewhere. This family grew up in the world. They live a boyfriend girlfriend life for quite a bit of years, and yeah, city life. And they got married and decided to stay together, and they stayed together as one couple for quite a number of years and had children. And then about 6 years ago, the Lord was starting to really work in their heart. And they were from Washington State, and they had absolutely no clue how to live a Christian life, but they were just starting to really read the Bible and had nobody to follow to as living a conservative life. They had no answers. There were no friends where they could go and get an idea how they should do. And then to see somebody come along and picks me up, and I can see immediately that they try to serve Christ just by how they're behaving themselves and how they're dressing themselves and all of that. They're just simply saying that we read it out of the scripture. That's the only place where we got it from. There were no Mennonite people telling us how to dress or what, and then they're looking the way I was describing you already. I was very blessed by that, and we said, how can you find that in the scripture? Because we're just growing up with the Mennonites, and then we do what they do or whatever. And then they said, we read this and this and this. And I say, praise the Lord. That's good. We were having Friday night Bible studies, and they were there coming along with us to the Bible studies, and they had one evening sharing their testimonies, and we got to hear more about their lives there too. So they had a long testimony in their life, in their story, or whatever. Yeah, and yes, as we were getting ready, we came over to this village, made a couple trips there just to see how things were and where we would put up a tent. And we ended up deciding not to put up a tent because the chairman, he advised to just probably rent their building that they have there for public meetings. Just rent that building, and then we could use that for $50. That's $25 Canadian. We could use it for a whole week, no problem. And I said, well, that's easy. And he said he wouldn't trust the neighborhood if they would behave having a tent up there, that it would work. They might give problems. And we had only a couple weeks of being there in Belize to get everything ready and being new with going to a village for such a long time. I said, well, let's just put that aside and not worry about the tent. We'll just use this building, and we could take our chairs, and then we could have it in this building. And that's what we did. So we went there mid-November, and Nathaniel Herman, brother that was fellowshipping with us here before Christmas, or in the summer last year, he was with us there, and he joined us full-time. He was with us there playing with the children, peeling the oranges for us as we were sitting together and fellowshipping after the service or in the morning when we were having prayer meetings. He went out to buy a soccer ball and was playing with the children together. Whenever we were wanting the children to come together, we first threw out the ball and kicked the ball, and then the people came, the children came, and we had a class after that. He was really good in that, very, very blessed. We took our machetes out and one morning and went and see if we could clean a yard for a poor lady or widow or whatever, and we did find a widow that we could clean the yard. So we cleaned the yard, but seemingly there weren't too many yards waiting, like ready waiting. I mean, if we had spent our time, we probably could have found the right yard, but then we just made ourselves useful, cleaned the park a bit, and then the third day, or was it the fourth day, came a brother visiting us from the Spanish Lookout community. He drove over and he just visited us there for one of the evening services, and he said, "Hey, I've got some Spanish tracks along. Would you like to have some?" I said, "No problem, that sounds good. That will give us something to do during the day." And he happened to have a couple boxes full of lawn torches. I don't know if you know what they are, but they're little booklets, about 30 pages, that is printed by the Costa Rica Church, Mennonite Church from Costa Rica, Pablo Yoder's area. I mean, involvement. I'm not sure if he is part of this printing or if, but involved in it. Anyways, from that church there, I think it is bi-monthly that they print a little paper, and this brother has been accumulating these tracts by thousands of them. He didn't want them. There was an order that somebody didn't take care of anymore, and those that didn't take care of them, that was me, because I used to hand out tracts when we were working at CDI, and now they were still coming, but nobody was handing them out, so they returned them back to me and said, "Okay, here you are." And I said, "Okay, good." And so we had our arms full and we handed out tracts in the mornings and the afternoons. We got ourselves ready to have a service, children's class in the afternoon and the evening, a message. Men sharing their testimonies. Nathaniel was sharing his testimony one night. Grady McDonald was sharing his testimony one night. And then there was a native that we found in the village, and he was on fire. I don't find too many people in Belize just walking through the villages that are really on fire, and he was just ready to give it, with probably some accusation loaded to it. I mean, that often when people are really going, they're probably fired by some accusations too, because these people are so bad and they're going to do better now. But I'm not saying that he was that loaded with that, but anyway, he was going at it, and he was sharing his testimony one night. Saturday night we had him come out, and he shared his testimony on how the Lord saved him and how he had been a real drunkard and how the Lord saved him from that. He had been a carver, and he had been carving monuments for the Catholic religion, and he quit carving them, and how he had been just about persecuted because of that, or at least knocked down his name pretty bad, willing to sacrifice his income because that had been good income for him, and sacrifice that. And the Lord had been speaking to him clearly through Scripture. he had happened to open up the Bible. He had not been reading it quite a bit, but the Spirit had told him to take a book that was up there somewhere. I think he was part of his testimony, and then he took it down, and then he opened it up, and he had been reading the part where it says that they have to nail down with nails the god so it doesn't fall down, and he had been carving some gods there. It was just like really got him, and he got saved, and he turned away from that, and he was there. And then we had another brother coming in from Spanish Lookout that has been going through lots of different difficulties and hard times. I'm not sure where he really stands, but he was willing to come and share his testimony from turning away from wicked ways to righteousness. And he shared his testimony, and then we had that in a church service of a Nazarene church. There's quite a few Nazarene churches in Belize, and they opened up the church house and had their whole fellowship come together for that evening of testimony from this man. So we had testimony there from this brother sharing how he got saved from drunkenness and prostitution a lot. We really enjoyed going for meals. We brought groceries to a family, and then they cooked off of that groceries. They cooked for their family and for a group, and then that way we had a wonderful good meal every lunch and supper. Breakfast, we did ourselves breakfast at the place. We had rented a house, a big house, 4-bedroom, kitchen, and a big porch, stove, fridge in it, and we were able to rent that, and that worked out just fine. That was November, and then after November, we decided to slow down with going out for a bit. We would spend some time getting to know. Well, simply, I wanted to get this little business started that I was thinking on. I wanted to see, have a trial on some masonry work, see if that would do good. So I spent another about 5 weeks working with that after this meeting. And during that time we met more friends. The Grady McDonald family, they had their friends coming in from the U.S., Jim, I don't even know his last name. And then there was Jeremy. Oh, I should know their last names, but I don't. I just know their first names by friendship names. But anyway, they were close friends, and then in January we decided to put up the tent and have this brother Jeremy speak and encourage to the group of believers that are out there in Spanish Lookout having our prayer meetings on Friday nights. And so Jeremy was standing up and sharing the Word of God and sharing from his heart what he'd been going through. He had been fellowshipping in a home fellowship with Grady's together for the last 4 years. He was a Baptist, and seeing many errors in the Baptist church, he turned to the Lord in a much deeper way, and he shared some of those revival experiences walking with the Lord. And we were having that in Spanish Lookout. And in that meeting, we didn't really plan on having it in Spanish Lookout. But why we had it in Spanish Lookout was we had planned to go with this Jeremy together to PG, which is this route going south for about 3 hours. We had planned to go there, and we really wanted to go there for a week and spend a week in one of those villages just to encourage a certain family that we knew and the village people. And then that just didn't work out because we didn't have the money for that. We had used up what we had for going out, so we just stopped and prayed and fasted for directions, and we really prayed and asked the Lord to lead us on how we could go on. And that's then when we put up the tent in Spanish Lookout and just had our meetings in Spanish Lookout rather than go out to PG. As I was praying, the Lord gave me a little word, and sometimes the Lord gives a word, but now if we're putting it into words, we don't really know what words we should use, but something like this, that Reynold, open your eyes, you're right there, and what that right there meant was like, if you're here in Belize, it's only like 3 hours and then you're in Guatemala, or you're 3 hours and you're in Honduras, or you're 3 hours and you're in Mexico, or you're in Belize. I mean, if you would open up your eyes, the field is big around you. You don't need to travel far to reach lots of people. I mean, you're just right there. And it was something like that. Sometimes we would think about missionaries going to Africa, and then, oh, they travel 13 hours there, and then they on a bus and jump and bump, and they get there and they stay there for a little bit, and then they go another route, 5 hours, and it all includes the story, right? But now, to me, it was like, my mind, you know, I was born here, and I'm so small, and my mind wraps around here, and it's having a hard time to grow bigger, right? And it was just the Lord was saying that, hey, you are right there. You could just let it go if your eyes would be open, and that's my desire, that my eyes could open up. And then the Lord did supply with some finance after a couple weeks of waiting and wondering what the Lord had for me and for us. And then, yeah, we had a little bit of money available, so we jumped in our car, or we have a 4Runner there, and we packed it, and we took groceries along, and then we hit road. We had a little bit of business to do here in Bamapan that we knew that we should do, and then we will be going south, and we will go for 5 days and just see what we meet. And it was the most blessed week we had in Belize, if we would think about having a blessed week. We started off, and then we came to Bamapan. We met on the road there. We were trying to meet one Elijah there, Vermont. Jonathan had been encouraging me to meet this Elijah, and this Elijah had been emailing me, and I was wondering, who are you, and where, and what, and he said, oh, Hope Creek. Oh, Hope Creek. I mean, I thought I knew all about Belize, but Hope Creek was a brand new name for me. It just didn't ring a bell. And, oh, well, we tried to connect, and then he said, oh, yeah, he's coming to Bamapan. We could meet in Bamapan. So Monday morning we left and we went to Bamapan. We tried to call him, and he called, and we just, I don't know, every 5 minutes he called me again, where are you? And I said, oh, well, I'm coming. I was wondering, who are you? What's wrong? I mean, can't I come and then you can call me or something? No, we kept driving, and then finally we met there and we started to talk, and that first phoning impression probably wasn't quite as bad, but we then found a young man, Elijah Vermont, a very burdened with all things, all kinds of things that he was going through with church issues and missionary life and all kinds of dirty stuff happening around him that he never thought would ever happen. And he trying to lead out because he was the only leader left there in a certain area, and the fellowship was becoming very small. He was thinking maybe he should go and join a church somewhere, not being all by himself. And oh my, people were calling from America all the time trying to give him advice and counsel, and he was trying to walk a different way, and they were going to excommunicate him if he wouldn't put his guitar out, and oh boy, just a big load was on him. And we, in Balampan, we decided, that's right, that's what we'll do. We'll stop at his house for supper and for night, which would be down the road about an hour and a half. So that we made an appointment. And while we were here, there were a couple other guys. Hey, are you charity? We are looking for a charity church. Some other guys that were just beside them. I said, oh, well, charity. I mean, I don't like the word charity because, you know, charity. Yeah, well, okay, but what are you saying? I mean, if you're wanting to know, what are you after? Oh, we're looking for a church. We've been on internet and we're looking around. We see that there's some kind of charity, something. It sounds really good. We'd like to know more about it. And where are you from? Oh, well, we are just from close by, Springfield there. That's where we live. And could you come over and we could talk? And say, oh, yeah, well, we'll first go south and then we'll come back. On our way back, then we'll stop here. So we had an appointment going and an appointment coming back. So we had a little time set. And that was good because we wanted to be back by Friday night back here. So we decided, yes, Friday lunch will be here. And then we'll be back by Friday night for a prayer meeting here in Spanish Lookout or wherever. So, but then I had heard that there was some kind of new group of people coming together in a new place in the jungle somewhere, and they had more life. I wasn't sure what it was. I heard something about it, and it was called Agua Viva. And I wanted to know something about that too. And I asked them, do you know anything about Agua Viva? Are you the people from Agua Viva? Oh no, they are not. But yeah, that's just a little different route here. And that'd be right here. Okay. So we did our business in Balampan. Made our contacts and agreed. We did our business there. And then we left from there. And we went to Agua Viva. We had... we met Gerhard Fair. He's from Bolivia. I don't know if anybody of you would know him, but he's serving there as a pastor for a new church. There's a stir going on in the Mennonite circle here. These are the Amish from Barton Creek people moved to a different location, Springfield, before they were living here, and they, Barton Creek is here, and they moved over to a new settlement here. If anybody knows what Barton Creek and Springfield is, but anyway, and they've been having something going on here, which there was a brother bold enough to stand up and say, hey, I'll stand up for my faith and do something about it, and that caused to start a new church where there's Spanish, Americans, Mennonites from Spanish Lookout, a shipyard, Old Colony people. Shipyard is the location. Old Colony people Springfield people. They're all coming together to fellowship here in this little new village here. So, and we sat down and talked with the pastor there for a couple hours and just listened to him. And we went on. We stayed over here for the night with Elijah Werman. And from there we went up south and we stopped in many different homes. One morning we stopped in a home. I wasn't quite sure why we would stop there, but we did stop there. And it's a deaf mom. Her children are grown up enough that they were all in school. She was there by herself, and poor. Her husband left her, and we were just there. We're not quite sure what to do. But then I said, "Hey, maybe we clean your yard." I saw she was talking about how hard it was for her to clean the yard, only machete and. The yard was not too small, it was good enough size yard, so I offered, well, I can grab a machete, I could clean some, and I spent about hour and a half chopping her yard. After that, we encouraged her to find Jesus Christ in her daily walk at home every day, she knew how it felt to come to the altar call and kneel down at the big camp. She knew that, how that felt. But I just encouraged her to have a daily walk, just come to her devotional place every morning and find rest and peace with all her problems that she was having. And I think she was able to understand that, but I don't know how what she's going to make out of that. But then we went on and we stopped in another home where there was this deaf boy, 20 years old, and he was having problems with the family because he had some money on saving somewhere and he had spent it on buying a bike and he had been biking out and getting drunk with his friends all the time, and then it was stolen, just basically brand new, and it made the family upset because if he had more cash in the savings, he would buy another bike just to be stolen again. Oh, on and on those stories go. And then this young man knows so well that drinking is a very bad thing, he should never do that, and just kind of laughing about it. And then they, his older brothers and uncles had been going out to hunt for hunting, and they came back with a peccary, a wild pig, and they were cleaning it while we were there. They put it on fire and burned the skin so that they can scrape off the hair and the skin. A lot of smell to it, and they were doing their little meat. We left before they were having it ready to serve, not that we wouldn't eat of it, but we had to go, so we went over to a different home that we knew. She had been working, this home where we are now going was an older single lady, where we hadn't been for a long time because she was off the road a good 40 minutes drive on real rough road. So whenever we came down to the area, we still left her because she was extra further away. So we decided to go there, and we drove in, and we decided to try to stay there for the night. So we had our tent packed and everything ready. So if we didn't find a place to sleep in the house, we would just put up our tent and sleep there somewhere, and encourage this sister. She's a believer. She believes in the Lord, and yeah, so we came there, and she was so excited. She didn't know what to say, but one thing that was on her mind that was, I have to stay home. I have to take care for my mom. Dad is still drinking the way he used to drink, and he's drunk all the time, and he steals our stuff and sells it, and I have to stay home. And then said, oh, no, we're not talking about that. I'm coming to visit, and then I'll leave. I'm not taking you back to the school. And I found out she was worried about that. I was coming to pick her up to take her somewhere to school again for serve or something. And she was trying to excuse herself not to go. And I said, oh, no, don't worry. We're just coming to visit, and then tomorrow we'll leave, and you'll be staying at home. And then we were all happy. They ran to the shop to get their little ham. And whenever they have something special, they go out and they buy their little duck ham. We have the duck here in the store, don't we? D-A-K? The little tin can that we turn open with this little... anyway. They run out to the shop and get that and fry that with eggs together and tortillas and serve that to us. And we ate supper, and they made brand new corn tortillas out of real corn. We ate, and then after that we slept there. They had a nice house ready. They said, "Oh no, you just sleep in my room," she said. So she moved out of her room, and we could sleep in her room, which was a small room, but we were able to lay down. So we slept there, and it was all dark because they have no electricity there, and that was a strange thing for us to be in the pitch dark, not able to see nothing. But That was good. So we stayed there for a night and we went on the next morning. And yeah, we had a couple more good visits, came back. Stopped here in Springfield. There's two families from Germany, and they came to Belize to live with them, believing that it was a godly place to live, just to find out that they were more wrapped up with simple life than with Christ. And very disappointed, and being so disappointed brought conflict in and a separation, that they were kind of pushed out from the Boggy Mennonites here. And now they were coming out, and they're bumped down to this little area here. And but they still have a house in here where they are now temporary living. So they'll live there until this is ready to move there. And so we visited with them, and they were having some questions and some concerns. And when we were kind of through the rough waters about a debate if it was safe, after that we went on and it went well. We shared, and they pulled out their old farm wagon, not like farm wagon, like more like the children's wagon with the big wheels, and put milk and cookies and cake on it. And we sat there and had a good time fellowshipping, and then we went home for a prayer meeting. And we had met a man here by the name Ernesto, the one I mentioned the other day to pray about. And he was with the German guys there. So there were two Germany families, and then a native Ernesto, which did not have a Belizean accent at all. I couldn't quite figure it out, and I heard a little bit of his story leaking through, and he said he had not been eating for 30 days in the mountains, and then the Springfield people happened to find him on the road, and they rescued him, and all didn't make sense. I wondered, what story do you have? What is your testimony? And I said, oh, you come back for a couple hours some other time, and I'll share you the story. So okay, well, you don't even give it a little bit to me now? Okay, well, anyway, we drove off, and I thought maybe not, because it was coming towards the end that we had to come back. And so we left that there, and we came back, and then we had some more meetings here, and there's a number of brothers, about 12 of them, with the Mennonite fellowship, with the Mennonite people here, that would come together. There's about 12 of them that would group up and meet, and we are starting to have good fellowship, and we're sharing our burdens, and it's almost as if we should just let it go and call it a church. But we're still calling it just a prayer meeting. But we came together, and we had a couple brothers meeting to see if we should go on and have a church. It's something reversed. Like, have a brothers meeting to see if we should have a church or not. And no, we were feeling good about it. We were sharing and talking about it, and having a good time in the brothers meeting. And there was a brother. He said, hey, I want to be baptized upon my new birth. I haven't been baptized upon my new birth. I'd like to be baptized. Is anybody in the circle willing to do that? And there were a couple brothers willing to do that. And I had a meeting about that, and he said, yeah, we'll go ahead and do that on Sunday. And then there were some issues coming up that made the waters ripple a bit, but that shifted around from the brother that wanted to go ahead and baptize him to somebody else. So there still were some brothers willing to do that, so they went to the water, to the Spanish Lookout Edge water there, and they got... We had a baptism there on one of the later days of February or beginning of March somewhere. I don't know the date, but this brother was baptized. And on that same brother's meeting before the baptism, we had talked about it, and then this brother meeting said, amen, to go ahead, whoever wants to, and start fellowship in the Sunday morning services. So it was amazing. There were eight of them sitting together in a circle, and they all said, yes, go ahead, have service in Sunday morning. Although that is still kind of scratching it, there's like two or three families coming together. It's not that now there's eight brothers coming together. There were quite a few of them still back with the Klangemeyer church, but they said, yes, you go ahead, then we maybe could pull out or something like that. So we're in that bouncing around a bit there. So not sure what that is, but there's some good growth in that brotherhood there. The Lord is working out something. And then there were the first Sunday after that, there were a couple of brothers that said, hey, we preferred, rather than have a fellowship here, we would just go over to this one here. And then we went over and we had a wonderful fellowship right here. And I got to find out about the man from here, which was put out of the church. His name is John Harder. He was put out of the church, and what he then did, I'm not quite sure how the story all went, but he bought himself a couple thousand acres just neighboring to their piece, and he said, this is the land, I'll use this land to sell to poor guys, poor families, and those that want to start, and those that want to live Christ-like, and let the natives buy, and let the Mennonites buy, and let all a mixed culture buy and have their own property, and then we could mix that way and could have a church. He was believing that would be something good. And then he would use the prime land, if he could say, to sell to rich guys that would bring the money that he could supply cheaper land for the poor people. And that's what has happened. They've been dividing that there. Got to meet him, and somehow it was there that I thought, oh, maybe I fit in the ball, I don't know. And then I just asked him, is there still more land available? And he said, yes, there's still more land available. And that's all we talked about that. I asked for a price, but he gave a price. It was a reasonable price. So we left, and we kept on fellowshipping here on the following Sundays. And the Lord did lead me back to go back to the guy that bought this property to talk about that and see if the vision that I have for the staff ministry, if that would fit to his vision that he has here. He's selling this land, and if he would sell land to me on behalf of that vision. And we sat down. My dad got to hear about it. I was going, and it was on a Saturday. His shop was closed. He said, hey, Reynold, may I go with you? And it was just like if my dad was wanting to have a day off and be out of here. And I said, well, Dad, come along. You may go. And so me and my dad, I wasn't quite sure if I'd be able to fully share my heart if my dad was there, but I found no problem. I was able to share my heart and what my vision was, and we drove over back in here, and we visited and talked about how we would go about buying land if we would, but we first talked about what my vision was. My vision was, if we would buy land, that would be to have a small farm for family. We have boys, and they're growing up, and they, I would like them to be involved in a little bit of farm life. I would like to have a place where I could park or RV if we would have one. That would, I'm praying for one. I would like to see a RV coming. Maybe in a school bus, because school buses is the most common thing in Belize. I wouldn't show off in any way by driving a school bus, and it is rough and tough enough that you can drive those rough roads back to the back village, and that's what I'm thinking about. So a place to park that while we're not on the road, a place to have a home when we're not on the road, and then also I said I would like to see if we could have some extra land that we could have people that are really seeking and are needing a place to settle in their life. The way we've been doing here at Hessen, we've been renting around and we've been here just to refocus and reset our life a bit, and that's something that is very much needed in these days. There's lots and lots of people that are in need of reestablishing their life, and to have some land available for that. If there be families that would like to have a small little backyard for them to have their garden and stay there until they have their things together to move on, or even just poor guys or deaf people that need to be somewhere for fellowship. Communication is a big problem for them, and then if there's somebody that signs, they just love to live close by, that they at least can talk to somebody. So this is what I was sharing with the brother, and he said, oh yes, he says this is very much the same thing that's on his heart. He really loves to go out, but we are still looking for somebody that has the gift of speaking in Belize. There's the man that can supply land and the man that has a tent together. But now we need somebody that is able to really speak and preach the word. But now I don't know if that is what the Lord has for Belize or not. But maybe there are people waiting, ready for that. We just don't know. We just haven't met them. But we've been meeting so many people already. Could be that we'll meet the right person soon. So we went over, and he said, yes, the land that he has available is just right here where the German people are having their lot, and it is touching their settlement, and it comes touching all the way to this one. This is off of the couple thousand he's reselling, but back here it is just walking distance from his house where he has this John. He still lives here, right? At this walking distance, just walking down to the bush for about half an hour, and then we're right here, and it is touching their land, and then the German guys are there, and then they had a little another couple hundred of acres that are still to sell down there. So we walked over and we had a good look at it. We first sat down in their house and had some noodles and some, we ate lunch at their house first. And they had the big, big white oxen walking around their yard that they used to plow. That's a new thing for Belize, using oxen to plow. There was some strangers coming in and lived with the Mennonites there, with the horse and buggy people, and they trained a few oxen for them. And that just took a hold of them, and they're all now plowing with oxen. The oxen can't pull. I don't know what did they say. They last for sure the double length of time, and they can pull double the amount. Like one ox does like four horses or something, but it moves slower. So then that steps back. But it has a much, much more power than a horse. So, yeah, that was about the area. So we walked down, and we did find, we found that we still had a nice piece of land there, which looked all right to buy. And then we were talking about payments, and we still didn't know what our house was doing. And my dad is one of the board members, and then there in the bush he said, hey, no, didn't nobody tell you? I said, no, nobody told me nothing. And he said, oh yeah, the board decided to buy your house. It's just a matter of going to the brotherhood yet and see if they're okaying it. He's confident it's going. I said, oh no, I didn't know. Well, then I said, well, that would be my payment for the land. So if we would. We went home and we were thinking about it, and then I was really praying about it, and then one night, as I was praying about it, I was not sure what to do, but there was a sense of a father would say to his son, "Come, come." And to me, it was that way, that the Lord was telling me, "Reynold, come, let's go." And it was more like, start walking, start... I mean, if you don't see, be willing to step ahead and go. And I took that as a go-ahead to do the paperwork before we were leaving. So there, I did paperwork for 30 acres. We were an amazing place of 200 acres walking around of pick and refuse. Where do I want my 30 acres? That's different. We don't buy land these days that way. Walking around, say, okay, I'll drive my stick here. Here. And then, oh no, I want to have it in a little different angle. I'll have this way and then I'll that way. So I have an L shape. I don't know. That's what we wrote down on paper now. That we'll try to see if we could buy that. And my vision is to have land available to for the Church of Christ to grow. And it is about 5 miles away from electricity and running water. That I don't know if some of those things we'll just have to kind of wait until the Lord brings it clear what that should all be. But it's not in a very big hurry. But I was feeling led to go ahead and get some while it was available, and then electricity can be generated and water can be pumped from a well if that has to be, something like that. I don't know what the Lord can bring together, but and then Dwight and me decided to go and visit these brothers, and we were there. We went and visited the brothers in this area. Dwight had been visiting these brothers here often, and then we went and visited them. I thought it would be fair enough that he would have a little taste to see who they are. So we went there one afternoon. We spent afternoon talking with this one here, and then another evening with them. And they have a little different feelings about church life, but they're both on fire, if I would say. They're both loving the Lord. And then I did have the chance to come over. I said, hey, okay, now is the time. I'd like to hear your testimony. And then this Ernesto started to share. And in very short, he had been a 5-star tour guide, very famous for what he understood. He thought he was very, very famous. The job made him wear out, so that he came down emotionally and he was not thinking clear and straight all the time. He was being stressed out by overworking himself with the job he was having. And during that time, his bodyguards made some plans in robbery, and he, in his off mind, he said, "Give me a call, I'll pick you up." And the phone rang, and he went and he picked him up. And then when they were in the car, it dawned on him what he was doing. This is something where I don't want to be. I'm this tour guide here, and I'm involved in a robbery here. And it just made him sick to the bone. And he dropped him off, and he went behind a church building somewhere, and he was just not knowing what to do. He did not know what to turn to the left or to the right. He said, "The only way I can go is suicide, kill myself, because prison is not a payment. I've been going too bad. I mean, this is beyond prison. I mean, I've been so bad, the best thing to do is just to kill myself." So he tried to kill himself. First he tried drowning him. That didn't work. And then he went on. He hiked into the mountains, and he tried to hang him there, and he tried hanging himself for 15 days, tried to jump off a tree for over 100 times, and it just did not work. He was actually on the tree, pushed him off, but then something as a spring pulled him back 100 times, over 100 times. After 15 days, he said, well, this doesn't work. I'll just starve myself to death. And he tried to starve himself to death another 8 more days, but finally the Lord brought thought to him that maybe he should start to think positive, and he started to think positive. And as a tour guide, they've been touring this Mennonite settlement, and he had sent some love there, which was foreign to him. He didn't know what was love. And while he was trying to think something positive, the Lord just as a flash brought this village and this family, when he was back in the bush here somewhere in the mountains, where the clouds were hanging low all the day, brought that flash to him, say, hey, I want to see that family. I want to see that family. And from there, as black and white, his suicide left, and he wanted to live, and he wanted to see this family. And now he tried to survive. Now he was trying to survive. He was down 30 days without food and water, or maybe some water in between. So he tried to survive. He did the best he could to try to survive. He drank water, and because he hadn't been drinking so long, it cramped him terrible. And he couldn't walk more than 30 feet, but he was lost in the mountains. He didn't know where he was. The only thing he could hear was the Jake brakes of trucks off of the highway. So that gave him a direction which way to tumble. So he started off, and by the living grace, he came out. He came to the road somewhere here, somewhere on the road, on a gravel road there, where he fainted, collapsed in front of one of the Mennonite guys, and they take him into their little clinic, put IUV on, and they ask him, do you believe in God? Do you believe in the Bible? And then the next one comes around, do you believe in God? Do you believe in the Bible? And no, no, no. And after 7 days, he says, I have to know what this Bible is. I have to know what this God is. And he opens it up and he starts to read, and he gets born again and he's saved. And that happened September in 2010, which is 1.5 year old story. And now he was arrested from here just Monday, I think, a week ago or something like that. That's why I was saying pray for him. He has been here with them from September 2010 up to now, which is a year and a half, and was now arrested. And he doesn't know any other story than that one that I just shared. By the way, after 4 more months, he started to become honest with the people here, and he shared his sin, and he shared what had been the real story, and came out with the real story. And he then made a loan here, and he brought back the balance of the money that he had stolen, or that they had stolen. He brought back what was stolen, and he had asked him for forgiveness, and the guy that they had been robbing said, yes, I forgive you. So they covered that ground. But now the last I heard was just, why, what? Arrested, but why? And that's the last I've heard. But I could understand, probably the government is not clear with him, even though if he brings back the cash, he was still mean, right? I don't know what the case is. They don't. They will know by now, but they are not in good service area, so they have to hold their phone just right to receive a call, so I can't just call them and find out. So the Lord is working there, and that has really blessed me to see that the Lord is doing a real work in Belize, and I think it has to do. It has to do with when I was here, the Lord told me, open up your eyes a bit. And He's asking me for more open eyes, not just here, but I think that was part of it, that He was trying to teach me to open up my eyes. And we are we are really not knowing where we are heading from here. As I've been saying, that this is the people are forced to move there. The German people are forced to move there because they are not accepted with them up there anymore. They have to move down, but they are not ready to just move into the jungle, and nor are we. We aren't quite ready to just live in the jungle. And well, there's not only jungle. They've cleared quite a bit of the land. Most of it is cleared land. But you know what I mean, just an open field. Only a bad trail up to the last mile, 2 miles is a bad trail, and the rest is all weather road probably. But some of those things are hitting them, and us is about the same. And now, to me, just because I have signed up for some land there, does not tell me that that we can't be in Canada. If the Lord wants us here in Canada, we can be here in Canada. It doesn't matter. We had a house all the time out there in Belize while we were here, from all the years before. And it worked to be here because of that. Having property elsewhere wouldn't hurt, as far as that goes. But still, if I look back and have a little overview of what the Lord's all been doing, I believe the Lord is putting together something which I'm not sure what it all is. And the other part is that I probably could start see that, oh yeah, the physical things and tangible things, they're coming together. But if the Lord is not real in my heart, then in other words, I would like to say it this way. The Lord was just showing me a little picture. And it was this way. Now, Reynold, if you would have this RV and you are able to drive around, and it happens that you fall off a cliff and the bus goes, would you have any message to bring? If then everything is gone. If my RV would be gone, and my tent be gone, then my message is all gone. Then it's not worth going at all. And do I have any message in my heart? That's my question for myself. I probably could work up the outside things, but if I don't have no message inside of my heart, then it's just like a business. We can improve, and we could invest, and it could work better, and it could generate easier, and we can work with we could work with it. But if there's nothing there, then it'd be just as empty as a business, because work, physical work, doesn't bring any life. So that is my desire, that I could have a real message in my heart, and I need a stronger direction from the Lord in that part. Thank you.